I love high places where I can look out onto things. Not being able to see, it felt rather claustrophobic. You kept looking at an RFS map and Cooma was in the centre and there was fire all around.
It felt a bit like an emotional roller coaster, and I think that's what everyone felt. The threat might not have always been right there, but it was lurking around the hill. You never knew where the wind was coming from and where the next fire would start.
And the noise got louder and louder, and it just sounded like the rushing sound of the wind, and I'm thinking, oh my God. Like, I've just relaxed for that minute and I've missed a fire announcement. It was still so black and I was just standing there, and it feels like minutes, but it's obviously only just seconds. Then just this boom.
You're listening to From the Embers, a series centred on the experiences of nine Australian communities during the 2019-2020 bushfires. I'm Sarah Mashman. Fewer than 7,000 people live in Cooma, a town about an hour and a half drive south of Canberra. The landscape is what draws visitors into the snowy Monaro region to ski in winter and explore the forests in summer.
To be able to go for walks and not meet anyone, that doesn't happen in Europe. There's people everywhere. The vast open places that every tree looks different, and the colours of the trees, of the eucalypts, I think is stunning. I remember when I used to take photographs after rain and send them to Switzerland, one person actually thought I painted the trees because they had bright orange, red and that green colour on the bark.
Evie Henderson came to Australia as an exchange student.
I worked on farms all over Australia, and that's where I met my husband,
Danny Henderson.
Took about 8 years to make the decision to leave everything behind, my family, my culture, my language, everything anew, and come to Australia and marry an Australian farmer.
It was a very long romance, carried out in a very 90s way.
To his workplace, I sent love faxes and phone calls. I mean, there was a huge amount of money spent in phone calls and letter writing. And I still got all those letters, which are the most beautiful thing. Pages of stories we wrote to each other because we didn't see each other for months and months and months.
Evie moved about 20 years ago to Danny's family farm. It's a large property, about 60 kilometres out of town.
I'm from a beautiful place in Switzerland called Lucerne.
She's been to the town before, but she still couldn't quite get her head around the change of scene.
So when we came to Cooma, I walked up and down the main street, looked at my husband and said, that's it. That's where I'm going to live.
And relocating to the other side of the world doesn't happen without moments of doubt.
Packed twice my suitcase, so think I'm going to leave. This is not what I want. But as soon as I was part of the community and started volunteer work and having a young child, going to playgroups, I was invited to a birthday party and they brought my husband and I introduced him to some of my friends.
And then she started getting paid work.
Only 6 hours a week. I was the community link worker. I linked people from a different culture background to the community, which I was so passionate about because that's what I wanted when I first came, to have someone who links me in. So once I worked there for 6 months, then I realized I belong here. This is my new home.
And she's continued to link people into the community. Evie manages Cooma's Multicultural Centre, and that's where she met Sujar Bosco.
It's a very welcoming community. My husband is a disability support worker and I am a secondary school max teacher.
Sujar and her family immigrated to Sydney from India in 2013. But after 5 years, Sydney still didn't feel like home.
Cooma came up with a place where we had schools. It gives my kids an opportunity and an opportunity for me also.
They packed a van and drove to Cooma 2 years ago, and they instantly felt welcomed into the community.
Everyone stopped to ask us, how are you finding it? How do you find it moving to Cooma? Are the kids getting settled? Do you get an accommodation? Do you get a job?
Home for many in Cooma is in the hills above the main road.
We wanted to find a spot for us to raise the girls, and we just come across here and it was so nice, like the bush surroundings, and the house was beautiful inside. And as soon as I walked in, I just thought, yep, this is home. Like, this is a perfect spot.
Jodie Brooks' single-storey house sits high on North Ridge and backs onto reserve land of eucalypts and scrubby Australian bush.
Spattering of trees, and it's really calm, like sitting here now, don't hear any of the traffic, it's just the few birds, and yeah, it's just really nice.
Jodie, her husband Matt, and two children, Sammy and Gemma, would take full advantage of the bushland that extended from their backyard.
We used to have a chair just out underneath this tree here, and we'd just come and sit out here, and kids would run around, and we'd just talk about what happened during the day.
We've used the ridge for all of the 25 years that we've lived here. We just enjoy walking, whether it's in our own backyard, as I call the Coomera North Ridge, or in the mountains here. Around every twist and turn as you walk along the ridge, you've got a different vista, a different aspect of town or the bush. We've got the beautiful chocolate wallabies that come out at different times.
Coomera has a local bushwalking club that ventures out once a month on multi-day walks. Louise Jenkins is a member.
I love high places where I can look out onto things and to vistas.
But over the summer, the high hills around Coomera became obscured with smoke.
Not being able to see very far, the lack of visibility, it felt rather claustrophobic. And looking at the blue sky today, you wouldn't think that would have been an issue, but it certainly was. We didn't see a blue sky for several months.
The bushfire season started early in New South Wales, and by November 2019, fire was advancing steadily on all sides of Coomera.
You kept looking at an RFS map and Coomera was in the centre and there was fire all around.
The threat might not have always been right there, but it was lurking around the hill. You never knew where the wind was coming from and where the next fire would start.
We were watching it from like the top of New South Wales and it sort of just sprung up and then it just was upon us.
From her home, Jodie could see across to distant mountain ranges.
We'd usually go out the back on the veranda, out over the mountains that we can see. Especially at night time was quite scary. As an adult, you sort of know how far away it is.
But for Jodie's daughters, Sammy and Gemma, the fires weren't a distant threat.
They can see the glowing red of the mountains and during the day just plumes of smoke coming up. You could see when a fire would really start because it seemed like it was so still from afar away and it was just coming up like a volcano, and then it had sort of spread out a bit, and then, like they were saying, spot fires were starting and you could literally see where they were going because then there'd be a new big plume come up. From here, you could just see how far it was jumping ahead. All those mountains were just glowing, and then you go back out and then it'd be gone and you're like, check the reports and you're changing weather and it's just completely moved it in another direction and you're like, how do they fight something like this? It was quite surreal to be watching it from back here, really, knowing it's not that far away and all those people out there that would be on their doorstep.
It felt like an emotional roller coaster. We had friends on the other side of the hill, so the fire was sort of in the middle of us, and depending how the wind blew, it either affected us or them. And so you couldn't sort of wish for a certain wind direction because you knew it will impact on your neighbours and friends.
And then fire did come to Evie's door. The Rural Fire Service undertook a backburn on a large nature reserve on the family farm.
A backburn had to be done to keep, well, other farms safe. And it was eerie, it was scary to step out of the house and just see the fire burning. This fire was supposed to be the good fire to help combat the big fire coming. But it was still burning, it was still destroying things. There were still animals who had to flee. I mean, the fire first came from the top down, because that was the natural fire, and then it had to be backburned, and then it started to burn from the bottom up. And then to see the whole mountain just in flames was intense.
Even with the preemptive backburn, fire was circling ever closer. Evie decided to evacuate the family farm. They packed their treasured possessions and some of the animals.
We have cattle and we have some sheep. We've got dogs. And my son has some ferrets.
The livestock were driven to safety. The dogs and ferrets, all 12 of them, could fit in the cars. But there were also six horses. Evie asked 12-year-old Alana to take charge of the horses. But there was a problem.
I said, look, we can take the horse load and we can take two horses. Which horses shall we take? And then to find her half an hour later, crying under the bed, totally distraught. What a silly question to ask a child. Which of the six horses do we take? I made assumptions she would just take the horses she normally rides. But of course, she loves every single horse. And me realizing what a stupid question I actually asked. I mean, I should have never asked that. But yeah, it's one of those things where you just do, try to be practical. So I didn't know how horses would react in fires. But my daughter was able to talk to some of the neighbors and she looked things up. And so she felt quite empowered when she was able to go out and open the gates of the paddock so they could go, knowing that if they have to go out away from the farms, the phone number is written on the horse and they will be found again. And I think it was those things that was important to talk with the kids about. There's little things we can do. And she was in charge of the horses.
They evacuated to the relative safety of town. The multicultural centre was closed, but Evie would still meet with people.
And it was to give the right information, to say, look, this is a good website. Download this app on your phone and then you really know what's going on. If you don't understand, please call me.
When we moved to Cooma, we just knew that it was a cold place. We didn't know that we were having bushfires. But in schools, the kids were given a warning, but even then we didn't expect that it was so intense. So the bushfire experience, actually, it was a quite an unexpected thing which we had.
When fire was within 8 kilometres of Cooma, Suja was at home with her four kids.
We were inside the house and they were very much worried and they didn't want to watch TV, they didn't want to play. And I can say that they were really tense.
Suja gave them a task to help her pack some bags in case they too needed to evacuate. But three of her kids, 8-year-old twins Aiden and Juanita and 11-year-old Caitlin, were removing the items from the bags as quickly as Suja could pack them and putting them into pillowcases.
I was like, what are you doing? Amma, we are asked to take a pillowcase. We are taking the things in the pillowcase.
But it was because messages from school and TV had said,
take the things which you can fit in a pillowcase. But my kids, they took it literally. So even in that tensed situation, I was like, oh my God, just keep it in the bag.
In Jodie's home, they too were considering leaving.
Spoke to the girls, had them pack up their things that if we wanted to leave from here, obviously with the bush right behind us, if, you know, they had their things packed in a bag and I'd had our photos and the things that you can't, as I said to them, we pack the things that you can't replace from a shop. So, you know, anything that you think that you couldn't ever get again, that's what you need to pack in your bag. And I'm like, not the whole house, just those sorts of special things and, you know, two sets of clothes and those sorts of things. And I had our car packed with, you know, the photos and their special awards and things like that. And they just had their bags ready at the get-go if we needed to leave at the front door.
Jodie figured that if they had to evacuate, the bags would be easy to find at the door. Fire threatened the town for 3 months, but there was one day that stands out in everyone's memory. It was around 4 PM on New Year's Day.
Flank. The latest information, multiple fires currently burning between Cooma, Bega and Batemans Bay. A number of these pose a serious threat to life. Fire activity is increasing. Spot fires are burning ahead of the main fire front. Deteriorating conditions forecast today. High temperatures, strong winds.
Everything turned black and we were all in our own homes and we all just walked out to the middle. It was just red. The sky was red. The whole place glowed and it was red, black glow at 4 o'clock. It was amazing.
When the fires were very intense and when the sky was red in colour, the sun was red, the sky was red, when it was supposed to have a very bright daylight, it was very dark and it was a first experience for my kids. They were very much worried and they were like every now and then they were checking the Fire Near Me app. I'm like, oh, it's a 15 kilometers away app, it is 14 kilometers, now it's an 8 kilometer away fire. So what should we do? Should we go?
it literally was dark, like it was, you know, seemed like it was midnight. And I think that was the day that, you know, it really affected the girls the most. We were in real trouble.
It seemed like the whole town was checking the New South Wales Rural Fire Services app and listening by the radio for any updates.
Reassure, I suppose, myself as well, that, you know, we were okay, and because they're like, we need to go. I want to get out. And I said, there's no point running somewhere until we know where we need to go.
The evening was hot and the girls were scared. So Jodie opened all the curtains so Sammy and Gemma
could wander around and make sure that they could see outside and if there was any sort of flame or light or anything up in the bush. All of a sudden we got this change and it was still really dark. I took them outside and I was like, see now it's gone really cold, like the temperature's dropped. And you know how Pop was explaining with the fire, you know, just even half a degree or degree drop in temperature, it really reduces the flames. I said, feel how cold it is now. And they're like, oh, it's freezing. And just their changing attitude, it was like, oh, you know, it's going to be okay now.
That night at around 9 o'clock, Jodie and Matt finally relaxed.
We just sort of parked in the first lounge room that backs onto the kitchen. We're having a toasted sandwich and watching a bit of telly, and we're just sort of like that final like breath to say, wow, we've made it through the day, you know, the chaos had started to subside.
Sammy sat with them and Gemma sprawled on a couch watching a movie. It felt normal. Then they heard a noise.
We're just sitting there and Matthew goes, what's that noise? And I said, oh, it sounds like thunder. Maybe we're going to get a storm now. And then he goes, no, it's going too long. Anyway, he goes, I'll just hang on, I'll have a look. And then he just starts yelling, get away from the window. And then I sort of stood up and the noise got louder and louder. And it just sounded like the rushing sound of the wind. All of our deck furniture started just dragging along the wooden deck. And I'm thinking, oh my God. Like I've just relaxed for that minute and I've missed a fire announcement. It was still so black and he seen something coming, but being so dark, you couldn't see what it was. I was just standing there and then he just grabs her off the stool and throws her onto the couch and he just yells at Gemma, who's down towards closer to the front of the house, stay where you are. So I was like, and then I'm like, what do I do? Do I lay on Sam? Do I go grab Gemma? But he's yelling at her to stay there. I was just standing there and it feels like minutes, but it's obviously only just seconds. Then just this boom. The doors blew off the back of the house. Our laundry door blew into the kitchen and I'm just inside the front door and I'm just waiting for like the roof to lift off or the windows to smash because he's just yelling at everyone to stay where you are. But he couldn't also work out what it was because all he's seen was like a flash of, he said it didn't know if it was metal or something. And I'm like just frozen and then all of a sudden I'm thigh high in black water, like cold, freezing, and there's rocks and there's tree branches. And I'm just standing there and he's like, open the front door, yelling, get to the front door. And it was like literally probably 5 steps to get from the front door to where I was standing. But it just felt like we were just going against the pressure to get to there and then to try and get the door open. And he's heading towards the side door to try and push it open to get the water to just flow through because it was just rising and spreading. And within seconds, the couch that Sammy's on, it took 3 or 4 of us to get it inside. She's just floating through the lounge room. Finally get the door open and just starts gushing through and we couldn't get through to 000. It was just ringing and ringing and I think so many people, it was happening all at once, so they just couldn't take the influx. And there was a guy I work with in the fire brigade, so I just rang him directly. I'm like, are you at the station? And he's like, yeah, we're just back, how you going? I'm like, get to my house. And he's like, is it on fire? I'm like, it's filling with water. And he's like, what? By this stage the whole house had been inundated and there's water still running down the driveway, and thankfully our house seemed to be a bit of a buffer for our neighbours, so they didn't get anything inside their house, which was really lucky. Like it sort of just come up to their back step, but they were fantastic. Matthew just grabbed a couple of neighbours and then just had them come to the door here, and we loaded them up with a girl each, and then took them down into that house. And the worst part is their little bags. It's all their special things was at the front door. And we'd been so prepared and waiting for one thing and got another and all ruined. And that's what I felt the worst about. I was like, if only I'd put them in the car or sat them up higher or... Anyway, they have been so good about those sorts of things.
100 metres above them, screened by trees on North Ridge, was the town's water supply. Two tanks holding 4.5 million litres of water each. One tank had split open, spilling the same amount of water as four Olympic-sized swimming pools into Jody and Matt's house. And on the day when everyone thought the fire would hit, a flood had come to Cooma.
I guess in hindsight now, we're probably lucky that it didn't take out the second one when it did it. It's split and like we're sort of in a direct path, 100 metres down, straight down the hill, straight through the house, really.
This was it. So a tank that size, the 4 million litres, burst in this direction and you saw the power of the water and the damage all the way down there. You can see how far some of the concrete has travelled. We're 50 metres away from the actual tank, so this is still the power of the water, and that white house down there was written off, and so was that house there, and then we'll pass another house that was written off.
It was concrete, and I think that in one way we're quite lucky that when it split that, you know, one of those chunks of concrete didn't come tearing down in that water. Like, if that had hit the house, that just would have completely just knocked the house down upon us. The water was bad enough.
The force of the water had pushed Jody and Matt's four-wheel drive down the street. The car was watertight and the contents were saved. The girls' bags, however...
was just their little prized possessions, the ones we couldn't wash and salvage. But what we were looking for... it's probably in our bag. What about that? Oh, it was probably in our bag. So, yeah. And as they say, like, oh, look, we found this. I thought this would be gone, but no, we found this.
Inside the house, the water had swelled to a metre high and no room was spared.
We'd had a new kitten and she was sleeping in our ensuite. And I couldn't get in because everything had obviously come out of our wardrobes and had blocked the door. So I sent Matthew in and here's the poor little thing floating in its little kitty litter tray, using its little kitty litter as its raft. So.
It was floating on water full of mud, sticks, rocks and branches. The reserve had come into their house, but help was immediately at hand.
We just sort of had so many people turn up the next day and there would have been 30 people just in helping us just with garbage bags and salvaging what we could and just grabbing things that looked like if you could wash it and fix it. The support from everyone was amazing. Like, and we saved probably a lot more stuff than had we not been able to have that amount of people and come and just help us on the day. It was just fantastic. Like, we were so lucky. And I guess that's why moving back to a small town like this where you grew up, they know that we would do exactly the same thing for them. You know, it was just overwhelming. It was just, yeah.
After the flood subsided, the fires remained, burning in the distance for weeks. But finally, they were contained.
We are told that this is the first time they're experiencing this much heavy bushfire in this region. Even people who are living here for years, they said this is the worst one we had. We hadn't had this experience for years. So we don't know what to expect for the next year. But I think for the next time during summer, we will be more prepared for it if something happens. Now we know what to do.
When you were evacuating, you had all the animals, your children. Did you pack up the letters from your husband, the letters you guys sent to each other?
No, they're in a little box.
Oh, I remember that for next time.
I certainly wasn't that prepared to have things neatly packed. You just realize, well, what's most important? It's people, animals, live things. And I guess memories. But the memories, yeah, they're nice to have, but you keep them in your heart.
Evie returned to the farm. When she'd first travelled to Cooma on exchange and stayed at the farmhouse that became her home, she'd undertaken a project.
Well, the farm is situated in a valley surrounded by hills. The farmhouse and the shed are surrounded by 2,000 pine trees, which I have planted when I came out as an exchange student. And they are now very, very tall.
But now those same pine trees, planted with so much hope, are a potential threat.
But we're knowing now, like preparing for the future, that maybe this is not the best thing to have. And usually I love trees, and the whole garden is full of European and deciduous trees, like beautiful trees. And to think all of a sudden that trees were a threat was quite hard to comprehend. And to think that that might have been a mistake to have so many pine trees, it sort of was a bit heartbreaking.
You've been listening to From the Embers. This series has been brought to you by the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia and is supported by the Judith Nielsen Institute for Journalism and Ideas and the Paul Ramsey Foundation. Our guests were Evie Henderson, Jodie Brooks, Louise Jenkins, and Suja Bosco. Thank you to Teen, Andrea, Don, Cecil, the Jihai Walking Club, the Cooma Multicultural Centre, Phil Daly, Tuamano Community Radio Station, and the Snowy Monaro Community. The producer was Lisa Burns. Engineering by Tegan Nichols. Script consultation from Zoe Ferguson. The theme was by Oliver Beard. The production management team was Vicky Rouse and Abe Killian.
And the executive producer was Sarah Mashman.
This podcast was made on the land of the Ngarrigo people and the land of the Muwinina people from country around Nipaluna. These lands were never ceded.